Topic is entitled, God is in the Details. I'd like to begin by taking you to the beach. I'd like you to think of your favorite beach. It might be a beach from your childhood, or a beach from your experiences here on the North Shore. It might be Ferry Beach, where we have gone for so many years. So having now arrived at the beach, and we usually arrive and walk over the sand dunes, and then we see above us the amazing sky, the horizons out there, then the ocean, then the waves are coming in. We hear the waves as well as see them. And then, of course, we smell the clear, fresh air that's so much a part of being at the ocean. And then we walk on the sand. We walk on the beach. In fact, in many ways, when we talk about going to the ocean, we often are talking about going to the beach. Or as one comedian said, I like the beach. It's so close to the ocean. Now, when we think of the beach, we think of sand. Little, ordinary grains of sand that are the details of the beach. Grains of sand that we take for granted. We step on them, walk on them, lay, eat, drink, spill, nap on those little grains of sand. I like to think that those tiny grains of sand are like the details of our daily experience. The sky is magnificent. The sea is vast. The ocean is dynamic. But sand just lays there, like our typical days. The vast, spectacular, godlike is the grand generalization. But the living presence is in our daily events. God is in the details was made popular by the architect Mies van der Rohe as a phrase because modern architecture eliminated decoration. But he felt in its place that the details of the building should be elegant, that the columns and the beams and every other part of the building should be elegant and in great proportion. Therefore, for him, God was in the details. Now, this morning, I'm not going to talk about God or architectural details. I'm going to talk about how we think and talk in grand abstractions, whether it's about God or art or truth, goodness, beauty, or love. But these qualities do not exist in the abstract. They live in the details, the grains of sand, the ordinary events of our daily life. Thomas More, in his book, Care of the Soul, supports this view. He writes, I have been emphasizing the soul's need for vernacular life, its relationship to a local place and culture. It has a preference for details and particulars, intimacy and involvement, attachment and rootedness. Like an animal, the soul feeds on whatever life grows in its immediate environment. To the soul, the ordinary is sacred, and the everyday is the primary source of religion. Details are important. It's dramatized in this story. Scientists at NASA built a gun specifically to launch dead chickens at the windshields of airliners and military jets, all traveling at maximum velocity. The idea is to stimulate the frequent incidence of collisions with airborne fowl to test the strength of the windshields. British engineers heard about the gun and were eager to test it on their windshields of their new high-speed trains. The gun was sent to the British engineers, but when the gun was fired, the engineers stood shocked as the chicken hurled out of the barrel, crashed into the shatterproof windshield, smashed it to smithereens, blasted through the control console, snapped the engineer's backrest in two, and embedded itself in the back wall of the cabin like an arrow from a bow. The horrified Brits sent NASA the disastrous results of the experiment along with the designs of the windshield and begged the U.S. scientists for suggestions. NASA responded with a one-line memo. Defrost the chicken.
Oh,
On a more serious note, poet Cynthia Ozick writes about the details of daily living in terms of the ordinary and the extraordinary. The extraordinary is easy. And the more extraordinary the extraordinary is, the easier it is. Easier in the sense that it can almost always be recognized. The extraordinary does not let you shrug your shoulders and walk away. But the ordinary is a much harder case. In the first place, by making itself so noticeable, it is around us all the time, the ordinary has got itself in rather bad fix with us. We hardly ever notice it. The ordinary is simply by being so ordinary tends to make us ignorant or neglectful when something does not insist on being noticed, when we aren't grabbed by the collar, by the presence of an event. We take it for granted. The very things that most deserve our gratitude. And this is the chief vein and deepest point concerning the ordinary, that it does deserve our gratitude. The ordinary lets us live out our humanity. Ordinariness is sometimes the status quo, sometimes the slow, unseen movement of the subtle but inevitable cycle, like the ride on the hour hand of the clock. In any case, the ordinary is above all what is expected, and what is expected is not often thought of as a gift. Ralph Waldo Emerson saw the extraordinary in the ordinary when he wrote, "The ordinary sight of the evening stars would seem extraordinary if they only came out one night in 100 years. In conversations, we often talk about the extraordinary. I know I do myself. What trips have been taken? What events have occurred? Rarely do we say, "I had a wonderful, ordinary day. I spent time with people I like and love, enjoyed a hearty meal, had a few treats, breathed in fresh air, and had a good night's sleep." We all seek and perhaps need the extraordinary, but not at the price of denying the gifts that each ordinary day provides. Now, we all want to make a contribution in life. Sometimes it's called fulfilling your passion, to do something meaningful, perhaps through the work or community. Hugh MacLeod has a short book entitled Creativity, about creativity, with the intriguing title "Ignore Everybody and 39 Other Ways to Creativity." He discusses how we all want to fulfill our dream of contribution, whether it's in the arts, business, or education. We want success in our field. In a hard-hitting text, he points out it is not easy. And then he adds, life comes down to the daily basics, the details, the ordinary. He writes, birth, sickness, death, falling in love, watching TV, raising families, mowing the lawn, going to the movies, taking your nephew to a ball game, drinking beer, hanging out with your buddies, playing frisbee on the beach, painting the house, tending the garden. No matter where your adventure takes you, most of what is truly meaningful is still to be found revolving around mundane stuff you did before you embarked on your adventure. The stuff that'll still be going on long after you and I are both dead, long after our contributions to the world are forgotten. The fundamentals of daily life are not only ordinary, like that common sand, they are also eternal, just as the sand is forever. No matter how much the world changes, these fundamentals will be the stuff of our days. An example close to home, our son Bruce and his wife Lori now are empty nesters. Their two children, our grandchildren, live on their own. Bruce said that he was reflecting upon his feelings and they were reviewing old photo albums and videos. And they had extraordinary vacations, traveling in Europe and Africa and England. But it was the simple, ordinary, day-to-day experiences that he and Lori reminisced most about. The use of a cute phrase, a bedtime ritual, a quirky habit, and best of all, that all-consuming squeeze the life out of you hugs. We can all get a sense of the value of the ordinary when we've gone through some difficulty, such as an illness, perhaps recovering from surgery, or any event that's traumatic. We just yearn for the ordinary routines of daily life. If things could just be normal again, have a cup of coffee in the morning, a simple breakfast, the simple pleasure of a shower or a bath. Going to bed on a typical, ordinary night, I often think how fortunate I am to lay down on a soft, roomy, comfortable bed. Stark contrast to that of the experience of Viktor Frankl, who describes his night in a Nazi concentration camp. Before he was captured and sent to Auschwitz, he too lay down on a bed, just as we do, a comfortable bed, every night. But in that concentration camp, sleeping was no longer normal. The prisoners' beds were on wood tiers 6 by 8 feet, hard wood, no mattresses. Each tier had 9 men, and they lay side by side, cramped and huddled one to each other. Living with our loved ones is an important part of each ordinary day. But there's a tension between the extraordinary and the ordinary of love. We talk of love, the idea of love, romantic about love, always in a general way, but love's reality expressed in day-to-day events, the details, those grains of sand. I think of two stories I want to share related to those details of love. Richard Zeltzer tells a story of how he conducted some surgery of a young lady, and she had a tumor in her mouth, and he had to take it out, but in so doing, he had to cut a nerve that made her mouth a little bit crooked. And she asked, is it going to be that way forever? And he said, yes, I'm afraid it will. Her husband was in the room, and he said, I kind of like it. It's kind of cute. And so then he reached over to kiss his wife. And Seltzer said he was so close to them, he could see the husband slightly twist his mouth so that it would fit her mouth, so that she would know their kiss still worked. And he said, in respect, when there's great love, there are great miracles. A small detail of life, but showing an expression of love. Another experience is one that I had myself. Two members of our church, Richard and Roseanne, wanted to be married, and they lived on Cape Ann. So they wanted a more traditional setting out near where they lived. So we conducted the service, and in the service they wanted to share or have an opportunity for people in the congregation to share their view of them and their marriage. And so we got to that part of the service, and the best man began, a few other people shared, and then an elderly lady got up and leaned on the front pew, introduced herself as Mildred. She was Roseanne's grandmother, and she said, I want to tell you a story. And she said, every morning, Bill, who has passed away a few years ago, and I would have breakfast together, and then Bill would go off to work in the shipyard in Gloucester. But she said, the first thing I always did was go to the east window and watch the sunrise. And sure enough, I knew that Bill would call me every morning, and he would say, did you see the sunrise this morning? And she would say, yes, I did. And they would talk briefly about that sunrise. She said that I knew that Bill really loved the sunrise. It was very important to him. But what touched her most deeply was his desire to share the experience with her. Mildred then concluded her comments by looking directly at Richard and Roseanne and saying, I began each day knowing Bill loved me enough to share what he loved most. I wish for you a similar blessed marriage. As my remarks draw to a close, I reflect upon the opening words of John Kennedy, who tells us how we humans are tied to the sea. The reading, the sea's horizon, tells of the many ways and perspectives we view our experience. The hymn, life is the greatest gift of all, our grateful spirit sings. In my sermon, we started at the ocean's edge, a place both exciting and relaxing. We look out at the sea and view the distant horizon under the grand sky, walking on the sandy beach, millions of grains, particles of tiny sand that take it for granted sand. Emerson reminds us of the extraordinary in the ordinary of the night sky. Cynthia Ozick writes, the ordinary, by being so ordinary, is expected, but it is a gift. Hugh MacLeod tells us our ordinary events are not only omnipresent, they are eternal. Bruce reminds us of unique, special memories of child-rearing. And lastly, Viktor Frankl vividly reminds us to not take any day for granted, from rising in the morning to going to sleep at night. The extraordinary idea of love also finds its expression in the ordinariness of daily experience. Richard Zelzer's observed twisted kiss, Bill and Mildred's daily sharing of the sunrise over the ocean. I want to conclude with an experience shared by Chet Ramo, who was formerly the Science Musing column editor of the Boston Globe. He spoke at our church a number of years ago and told this story. I think it's a story that epitomizes the relationship between the abstract and the real, the extraordinary and the ordinary. Chet tells about a summer night he stayed alone in the Gallerus Oratorio, a tiny 7th century stone building that is the oldest in Ireland that remains intact. It's on the coast of Ireland. He describes the structure as about the size of a one-car garage, with both small entrance at the front and a tiny window in the rear open to the elements. The oratorio is dark, even in the middle of the day, intensely dark at night. Chet wasn't exactly sure why staying overnight was important to him. He writes, I had been thinking about skepticism and prayer, and I wanted to experience something of whatever it was that inspired Irish monks to seek out these rough hermitages perched on the edge of Europe, or, as they imagined, the edge of eternity. After enjoying the brilliant starry night, he retired to the interior of the oratorio, snuggled himself into a back corner with his knees tucked under his chin, and became immersed in the deep, isolated silence. I can imagine him somewhat chilled in the night air, waiting. As the hours passed, he began to feel a presence, a powerful sensation of something or someone sharing that empty darkness. He continues to explain that he is not a mystical person, but he knew he was not alone in that oratorio, the same feeling that monks in times past may have felt. The feeling was so strong that he went outside and was rewarded with the sight of the Aurora Borealis. Chet then returns to the oratorio for the remainder of the night, but that pervasive presence continues. Finally, morning arrived, about which he writes, as the sun brightened on the eastern horizon and the last shreds of the aurora faded, I was suddenly startled by a pair of swallows that began to dart in and out of the Gallerus Oratorio, hunting insects on the wing. I followed them inside and discovered a nest where three chicks perched on a protruding stone just above the place I had been sitting. The mysterious presence I had felt so strongly in the darkness was not a god, not spirit, not demon, but the respirations and featherings of baby swallows. The grand, the sublime, the ordinary, the extraordinary are not in remote abstractions or in faraway exotic, but with us in the pulsating rhythms of life, from baby swallows to our beating hearts. A life that is composed of the details of living like those endless, eternal grays of sand, a life filled with gloriously ordinary days that we need to gratefully share with others.